Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reeder. Last November, right here in Syracuse, in one of the most closely watched congressional races in the entire country, New York's 22nd District, Democratic State Senator John Manion defeated first-term incumbent Republican Brandon Williams. My guest today is that newly minted Congressman, John Manion. The 22nd District contains all of Onondaga and Madison counties and portions of Oneida, Cortland, and Cayuga counties, including the cities of Syracuse, Utica, and Auburn. Congressman Manion, welcome back to the program and congratulations.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to be on, Grant.
We really appreciate you making the time. I know you're really busy getting up to speed here. So let me just ask you first basic question. How is the transition going?
I'm enjoying it. It's really been a great experience. Obviously, there's a lot to do. I was a state senator and we had to shut down an Albany office and a Syracuse office. And then we are kicking into gear, hiring staff. Many of my staff at the state Senate are with me, some new folks, and certainly some people who have experience here in DC. So I think the biggest things in the first, from election day to now, would be hiring staff, getting the offices up and running. And I will say that, you know, everybody that comes on board has to get an official email address before they can start communicating with constituents. That seems like a small thing, but it doesn't happen on day one, doesn't happen the day they sign the papers. So while we're getting our office going here in Syracuse, which it is, and our website is up, so I encourage everybody who has a constituent case or concern or whatever it might be to please contact us. And then we will have a Utica office as well, which is a part of this process. We have a goal date of March 31st at the latest. But as far as the team goes, we've got a robust DC team. We have a robust Syracuse team. And we do have people hired who are dedicated to the Utica office once it's up and running. And they're already working with us.
Well, it sounds like you're getting a fast start. So I know that at the beginning and prior to taking the oath of office, new members of Congress attend a couple different orientation sessions. And I was curious to ask you a question about that, because as a state senator, you already know quite a bit about the legislative process. So I was curious to know what was the most surprising new things you learned when you had this orientation at the federal level.
First of all, I want to say that they were fantastic. The first thing that happened, we were 10 days in DC. Then about a week or two later, we were 3 days at Harvard. And then after session started, we were in Williamsburg, Virginia. Not everybody participated in everyone. I did and found it incredibly helpful. And yes, we know that knowledge or words or vocabulary is power. And there's a lot of things that translate from the state legislature to here, but some don't. And one thing that I found is that, well, I'll give you an interesting number and then I'll tell you something about the job. If you had to guess, Grant, I hate to turn a question on you. In the history of the House of Representatives, how many people have served in that capacity? And I won't make the answer if you don't want to, but it's 11,000. 11,000.
Okay. Yeah.
11,000 really is an honor and a privilege. Now,
that's a small number. I mean, when you think about it, I think I probably would have erred on a higher number, I think. Yeah.
Exactly. So I would have too. The reason I share that information is because it took me back a step to think. Yeah. I'm one of only 11,000 people that have ever taken the oath and voted on legislation here. Of those 11,000, how many have been women or are currently women?
I'm going to say, 200.
250.
Ah, not yeah. bad. Not
yeah.
bad.
But again, it is a reminder. You know, I look at the freshman class right now, 17 women in that class, and you go, this is 10% of about 8% maybe of the women who have ever served. So One thing about the process that I learned is committee work is different here. Changes in legislation happen in the midst of the committee. And honestly, in Albany, it felt like those changes in legislation happened more in the conference, meaning the Democratic Conference, the party in the majority. So again, I have not been in the throes of committee work other than just being established on committees and some really preliminary stuff. But amendments to legislation as it moves and the process, the reconciliation process that we're all going to see coming up here and trying to make sure that we have our spending, our budget in place is also different from the state legislature. And in an ideal world, they both would be very bipartisan on the scale of bipartisanship. We'll see what this Congress brings, but there certainly is opportunity for the minority party to get amendments in. I don't think they'll get in as frequently as the majority party members' amendments do, but they will. They do happen, and they will.
Well, that's good. That's good. That's good to hear. I was also curious to know if you've had any particular sort of chill down the spine, or you know, civic moments since you started. Any sort of particular times where it just other than that number that took you by surprise.
Sure. You know, listen, I'm a Democrat. I've been a Democrat all my life. And I've certainly, you know, Hakeem Jeffries came to the district. I've met other leaders in the party, President Biden, President Clinton. But day one down here, we got to meet, we were more sort of either it was the freshman class or it was just the Democratic freshman class. And then the next day we had a caucus meeting. And in that caucus meeting, you walk into basically what's a briefing from Catherine Clark and Pete Aguilar and Hakeem Jeffries. And you walk through that door and they just keep coming out of the door getting a coffee, which is, Nancy Pelosi comes in and then AOC comes in and a lot of people that I had spoken with on the phone. But that was a moment where I'm like, I am in this room right now. I'm in this room right now. And that was impressive. Also, when we were certifying the Electoral College vote, I was shaking hands with people and the guy I spoke with was John Ossoff and I didn't recognize him probably because I wasn't expecting it. And he said, I'm John. I said, I'm John. I said, where are you from? He said, Georgia. And I went, oh, yeah, you're that John. I got you. Yes.
So it sort of sounds like a little bit of the experience of you're a rookie and you're in the majors. And then the coach says, you're going to bat after Jeter. You know?
It is a little bit like that. Yes. Yep. The gravity of it is real. And yeah. You can appreciate it here. And of course the beauty of it, the majesty of it, the decorum, so far it's been really amazing to be a part of.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Congressman John Manion, who has just begun representing New York's 22nd district. So just tell us a little bit about your committee assignments, how they are going to be able to fit with your desire to work on behalf of the district.
Well, people know my background, and I would not have this job if it was not for really a passion for public education and it being the great equalizer and all that it does. So I was hopeful that I would get on education workforce, and I did. And, you know, this is a committee that does much more than just education. There certainly is a lot of funding that comes out of it. Title I funding that is to help some of our neediest communities in education and, you know, our disabilities funding. But also there's workplace protections in there. There's a lot based on health insurance coverage provided by employers. And then apprenticeship program. So I wasn't just a teacher. While I was teaching, I was also a union president. And then I was chair of the Disabilities Committee in the New York State Senate, the only one. And this is the space where I can really make some positive impact in all those areas. And that's where my knowledge base is mm-hmm. coming from. And, when the president was in the campaign and he was talking about dismantling the Department of Education, I disagree respectfully, particularly because of some of the things that I cited around individualized education and funding for students with special needs. So that's one committee. And then the other one was a little, I had a feeling that was going to happen. This one was a little bit of a wild card, but I served in the state Senate, and that was to be on the Agriculture Committee. And in Central New York, we know we've got a very robust agricultural economy and history. We have a farm bill that we have to get over the line, and there will be opportunities for me to fight for things that are good for Central New York farmers and those that are in that space. And, you asked what surprised me. We know what we're known for here in Central New York. There's a lot of things, but front of mind is usually dairy or apples. And when I found out apples were a specialty crop, it got my New Yorker up. Let me tell you, I was like, this is a specialty crop. But as you can imagine, those crops that we don't call specialty crops, corn, wheat, soy, we do a lot of that in that space too. But I'm looking forward to serving on that committee. And I've got a great relationship with local farmers, visited farms, and I tried to do my best to be their voice in Albany. I'm going to do the same here in D.C.
That sounds like a good combination. You know, you mentioned bipartisanship before when we were talking earlier. And I was wondering, have you, on that point or other points, have you spoken to your predecessor, John Katko, to get any tips about that? Because he made that a priority for his service.
I have. And of course, John and I have a good relationship. If you look back through the annals, I certainly supported Democratic candidates that ran against him, and he supported Republican candidates that ran against me. But we didn't take shots at each other. We touted the positive things about the people we were supporting. So he has been helpful. And we have a lot of common connections, being sort of West Side folks here. We actually attended the same schools. I bring that up because he's a little bit older than me, so we weren't in the same grade. But he has been helpful. And, you know, there's room for bipartisanship. He was a member of the Problem Solvers Caucus, and that caucus that is bipartisan is currently filled, and I've spoken with the leaders of that caucus and expressed interest in it. Hopefully, I'll find a spot there eventually. But right now, they have their numbers, and as you probably have witnessed, it's going to be a unique Congress. I've already had very good conversations, certainly with my freshman colleagues and members of the New York delegation that are Republican, because we've got a lot of shared interests with a number of things, you know, the tech hub, the drone hub, salt taxation. So we have absolutely going to find common ground.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Congressman John Manion. The Democrat defeated incumbent Republican Brandon Williams in New York's 22nd congressional district in last November's general election. On that point that I just mentioned there in the reintro, your seat was considered one of the top Democratic targets for 2024. Really got identified, and I imagine in the next 2 years, your party is going to be very keen to defend it. It's going to keep it in its sights. And I was wondering if you think that fact might help you to be able to leverage some additional funding or projects for the district, you know, through the Democratic leadership.
Well, number one, I hope so. And number two, if I certainly will do my best to remind them of that. In the state legislature, you want to do the right thing and you want to make sure you get your fair share. And I know that I did a good job of that and was a good voice of Central New York, now representing Central New York in the Mohawk Valley. The process is different. I am a freshman, but like I referenced in the previous section, there's spaces like in the Farm Bill where we can get things done for the district. And, you know, there's some hangover also that we have to keep our eye on. And that would be funding that has been appropriated in the past that could be cut if we're not careful about it. And I do, you know, some of that comes from legislation that might be one or two Congresses back. There's talk about the I-81 funding. There's concern. This has been in the media. We have checked into that immediately and been assured that we should not be concerned. You know, when the president signs an executive order that says we're going to pause these funding appropriations. We're in the midst of a project here. We have a contract. That contract is between the US DOT and New York State DOT. And this is the largest infrastructure project in the history of upstate New York. We want to make sure that's going. We can't go back. We've all driven those roads. A lot of us have anyway. And there's no turning back. We've got to complete this project, and I'm confident that's going to happen. But there's going to be opportunities there. And again, we, you know, this is governmental, but there's politics with everything in this world. And I'm going to try to advocate for Central New York, regardless of whether, you know, people are looking out for me or not.
Same issue with Micron, too. And I've read about Senator Schumer doing the same thing that you're doing with the I-81, making sure that will happen. I wanted to ask you this question that goes back to the last time that you and I spoke when you were a candidate for Congress. And I asked you, among other things, if Donald Trump should win, the outcome wasn't known back then. Would you be likely to join a potential wholesale resistance effort in Congress, you know, to try to take him on? And you emphatically said, yes, I will. How does that look now? Are what you're hearing is trying to figure out more ways to find common ground, or is there are the lines of resistance already forming? Where is your caucus, and where are you on that?
Exactly. Well, listen, we have to work together, and we still have to call out the president. These executive orders, I have, I'm participating in this show today. I've already been on other shows. We have a social media presence. Some of those executive orders, and I'll start with the commuting or clemency for the January 6th rioters. That is not the will of the people. It's certainly not the will of the justice system. And what many of the people on the other side of the aisle have said is, look at what Biden did. But I call that out and I say, I understand that. Some of that was preemptive because of what the current president was saying about what he was going to do. He was very clear about retaliation and retribution. So, but we're talking about not just people who broke the law. They broke the law trying to interrupt the pillars of our democracy, which is the certification of a free and fair election and the peaceful transfer of power. And that was driven by the current president and media and social media outlets that perpetuated this lie. And it's very dangerous for me, it's dangerous for my kids, it's dangerous for you, it's dangerous for Republicans and independents. And we can't have that, you know. So these were violent acts made against law enforcement to interrupt our democracy. So I disagree. And I'm going to continue to, and in every setting that I can, I'm going to remind people of that. I do, you know, this is one thing about politics, Grant, that I really don't like. You know, somebody will tweet at me from the other side and say, like, I demand that you call out, you know, the governor, or you call for this person's resignation. I don't like that. But I am pleading with more Republicans to denounce this executive order. And it's very scary. Some of these are leaders of white supremacist paramilitary organizations that are, I'm fearful that we're not going to be left in a better place as a result of their release. So we stand up. I stand up with my conference, shoulder to shoulder, to call things out. And I'll use access to the media to do it as well and remind people of what happened on that day and before that day and after that day. People went to federal prison outside of the January 6th rioters because of trying to overturn an election. And very dangerous. Can't have that. And we need everybody to call it out.
If you just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher. And my guest is Congressman John Manion from New York's 22nd District. Well, you've kind of given an early, I think, grade on the next question I was going to ask you. But what are your early impressions? I mean, we're in, you know, you and I are talking on Thursday. So what we all, you know, all of 72 hours into this thing. But what are your early impressions of the Trump presidency?
Well, first of all, the people he has around him and himself have had 4 years to plan, right? So when we flipped the switch on Inauguration Day, we saw what happened. And like with his nominees, he is flooding the zone. He's flooding the zone with executive orders. And presidents have dozens, if not, you know, over 100 executive orders. But some of these are really negatively impactful, and they'll be litigated out in the courts. We've already talked about, you know, the excusing of the January 6th sentences. But also, Biden had an executive order capping the cost of insulin. That's blown up. That's going to negatively impact people's lives, you know, for sure. Certainly, some of the things that are directed at our history and to try to make sure that everybody has an opportunity moving forward, whether it's, you know, competing for a job or a spot in a program or a university. You know, some of those things, honestly, are just mean, anti-American, and appealing to his base. I don't think it appeals to the broad, you know, American public. And we heard a lot of in the campaign about saving people money, about costs, about reducing inflation. I don't see that here. I don't see it. And, you know, again, I think he's preying on people's fears, using immigration, an us versus them mentality, and demonizing. And it's so robust in what has happened with those executive orders that the Democratic Conference and my team are continuing to weed through it and push back where we can and find allies on the Republican side to push back and advance legislation or court cases to get this right.
Two of the things that struck me, and I don't think probably the one I'm going to ask you about is, I'm not a constitutional scholar, but I don't think it's likely to probably survive a court challenge, but one about ending birthright citizenship, and the other one that was in the inaugural address about taking back the Panama Canal. You know, those are things he had talked about, but I guess I had thought maybe that would be things that would be soft-pedaled once he was in office. What are your thoughts about this notion of rethinking birthright citizenship?
I think it's unconstitutional. You know, that my one-word answer is unconstitutional. As somebody whose grandparents, you know, came to this country, right? And my father was born here. He was a United States citizen. I talked to so many people who have the situation. And if we're going to end that, we're going to be talking about separating families. And it's just unconstitutional. I mean, I should stop right there. Okay, you know, okay. The president does not have the authority to change the Constitution with a pen stroke. And that is something that's really, you know, unbelievable to me. And I got so fired up about it, Grant, I forgot your second one.
No, that's okay. I just wanted to ask you about that one. I was just mentioning a couple of that surprised me. The Panama Canal was the another.
Oh, the Panama Canal. But again, we have relationships around the world, our allies. We are here in 2025. NATO has been in existence 80 years or so, in between 75 and 80. And the peace, by and large, that we've experienced over those 70 eight or whatever my number of years are here, has been largely because of our strength and our alliances. And, you know, one of those sessions that we talked about, we went through national security and new member training, and we've gone 78 years without a nuclear bomb detonation in wartime, not testing. And we've gone 78 years without a world war. And that is possibly the longest period of time going back millennia that we have not seen such large scale war. So the Panama Canal agreement, again, let's work through that. But I was hopeful that like tariffs on Mexico and Canada are going to increase costs for Americans and ruin some of the projects that we absolutely need related to our infrastructure and projects like Micron.
Okay. We got about a couple minutes left. I want to squeeze two questions in if I can. One of the things that's gotten a lot of attention, obviously you alluded to it earlier, is the cabinet picks that the president has made. Just really quick here, of all of the picks, is there one that you think is really the best? Who's the best person coming in, you think?
That's, you know, I will say this, you know, Marco Rubio, I believe, depending on the timing of this, he has been approved, I believe. You know,
yes, that's right. Yeah, that's unanimously. Right.
Exactly. And he is someone who I think, you know, has served this country. He has character. I think he's qualified. I think he's experienced. And, you know, yes, he's already an elected official and Trump likes to be an outsider and he likes to bring in these outside folks. But what we need from individuals, we need them to be qualified. We need them to have character. We need them to be experienced and have the background to do the job. Clearly not. I mean, I would say probably a majority of these candidates don't fall into that category. I think that he does. And that's the kind of people we need representing our country.
Well, let me ask you, you got to be really quick here, but maybe just give me a name. But who is there one of the picks that stands out as the worst?
You know, the health policies that Robert Kennedy Jr. is carrying out there, to be in charge of basically the largest healthcare, you know, system in, and when it comes to research that this country does, when it comes to partnerships, you know, and some of his positions on things, you know, I was a biology teacher and we eradicated so many diseases that were so negatively impactful on families, the loss of life, childhood mortality, as it relates to the vaccinations and other treatments for kids. So, you know, I certainly question that one.
I could see, people can't see this, but I could watch you were having trouble picking one, I think, but you picked that one. We'll have to leave it there. That was Congressman John Manion. Congressman Manion, again, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me, and I do hope that we can speak again as the session unfolds. I'd like to check in with you from time to time. So
I'm looking forward to it, Grant. Thank you for having me on today.
Thank you. You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, conversations in the public interest.
The Campbell Conversations, conversations in the public interest, is hosted and produced by Grant Reher. The program is edited by Mark Levonier. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University's Maxwell School of Citizenship and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program and hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.